Welcome to Bitches on Comics. I am your host, Essie Fleenor.
And I am your other host, Sarah Sentry, and we are here today with a very special guest. We want to talk to Craig from the I Want You to Watch This podcast. Welcome, Craig.
Not only do we want to, we're going to.
Oh, wow. Oh, geez. Oh, Craig's here?
Yeah, totally. Oh.
Poof. Bam. There I am.
Bam. Yay. The nightcrawler of Bitches on Comics.
Everything we ever hoped for.
Right. I mean, there's some discourse going on the timeline today about, which X-Man you would want to fuck. And, I'm sorry, can I say fuck on here?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
now that I've said it twice already.
Please.
Fuck.
We actually are offended if you don't. So
we've kicked like 3 people off the pod for not saying
get
fuck.
Out of here. Like,
you know what, motherfucker, you're gone.
We have explicit warning, so if we're not earning that, like, what are we doing?
Yeah, you gotta shove it in there. You gotta shove it in there.
You do.
Which is,
speaking
again, what we're talking about.
There.
Yeah, with the X-Men. And my obvious choice was Nightcrawler because, like, mm-hmm. you know, I want to see what that tail do. Like,
oh, yeah.
you know, like, I know.
Okay, like, I read that tweet today, and I did not remember it was yours, but I remember just cackling.
Well, no, that was so Clarkeisha was the one that brought up the tale specifically.
Oh.
Clarkeisha Kent at
yes.
I Write All Day on
yes.
Twitter. I initially was just like, yes, I've always loved the Blue Boys. Like, I've always had, like, you know, like the Beasts, the Nightcrawlers, the grayish, bluish, purplish Goliath from Gargoyles, if anyone has watched that. Not to mention voiced by Keith David, which, like, my God,
oh, no,
if that man's voice does not get you wet, then I don't know what the fuck you're doing. Like, I don't know what's going on down there because, Keith David's voice is just like, oof. So, just talking about fucking cartoons. No big deal.
Normal stuff.
Let's start this off right today.
That's once again something that we kick people off the podcast if they don't do.
If you're weird about people wanting to sleep with cartoons, get thee away from me.
Seriously.
Delightful. So tell us a little bit more about I Want You to Watch This, your awesome podcast.
So we've been going for over 4 years at this point. There might have been something that happened like just over 4 years ago that people might remember. I think it was like around November 2016.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. There's something that happened there. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but maybe
it's
someone
a blank
else remembers.
Spot in my memory.
Yeah.
Complete blank.
Just me and some friends. We were just in a place where we were like, we really just want to do something that brings us some joy and some levity and something that we can think about that is not this giant blank spot of 4 years in our memory. And so we decided to start a podcast about movies that we love. When it first started, it was me and my friend Dennis and my friend Colin. Dennis decided to go off and do some personal work and stuff like that. So we brought on our friend Tara, who is amazing. Love her. Like, the dynamic of the show is like amazing. I love it. We love to talk about movies that we want people to watch. 9 times out of 10, we succeed in that. Every once in a while, we watch a movie and it's like, ooh, wait, oh.
Whoopsie.
Yeah.
We relate
and,
to that.
Oh, yeah.
We definitely relate to that. We try to keep it, you know, like, I don't want to say positive because I feel like that there's like toxic positivity,
sure.
but we try to talk about things we're excited about.
Yeah.
And we can acknowledge the flaws and we can talk about what sucks about it, even while we talk about what we love. I'm thinking of Dazzler and the Grapplers, which was just an amazing comic.
Oh, God, yeah. Dazzler number 13, loyal listeners, which is a comic that is about Dazzler getting put in prison and the Grapplers, who is a team of women wrestlers, wrestle her in prison.
And it's real gay.
And, I was like, yeah, that sounds pretty gay.
It's my favorite comic ever written.
Yeah, Sarah's constantly pitching for people to bring the Grapplers back in comics.
I'm like, bring them back. Give me a
mini
series.
You know who make a great guest star in this?
The Grapplers.
You want a mini series? Let Sarah write the Grapplers mini series. Your life would be changed.
Oh my God.
Wow. Yeah, I'm like, I don't know. We need like Vida Ayala or like Teenie Howard on that. Like, Yeah, but we need somebody like already inside to like start like mm-hmm. working as like covert agents to, you know, just like gay the fuck out of the X-Men, which has already been happening
pretty much
since
already
the dawn
happening,
of X,
yeah.
Like, which I'm so for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a listener question recently that I think will air before this interview. And if not, hey, it's coming up, about what sort of like queer comics are currently coming out and comics by women that are currently coming out. And it's like a 30-minute segment. I swear, 13 minutes is us just being like, so here's what's up with the X-Men. Here's the titles you have to read. Here's why they're amazing. Here's what's super gay about it. It's just like, yeah, what are you going to do? Some days you just got to freak out about how gay the X-Men are.
It's right. True. It's one of my favorite pastimes. And we will be doing it again soon.
Awesome.
I know, I'm looking forward to it. So I think I Want You to Watch This is so fun. You all yeah. have such incredible rapport. You're, you know, when I was listening, I was like, oh, Craig's like the perfect person to come on our pod. You like to laugh. There's so much in common with what we do here at Bitches on Comics. So listeners, I hope you'll go check out I Want You to Watch This. And you can find them online at IWYTWT.com.
IWYTWT.com.
Ooh, that one was gave me chills. That's like going to be an ASMR someone's going to make. You just saying that over and over. Amazing. So another thing that we know about you is that you participate in Blacktober, and we would just love to hear about your process with that. Listeners, we've shared with you the amazing Blacktober zine. Make sure you go check it out on Gumroad. But Craig, tell us about what your experience was like. How long have you been doing it? And yeah, what did you get from it?
This is actually my first year. I'm actually surprised. I didn't realize that you knew that I did that, but that's great. That's hilarious.
I'm following you on Twitter.
But yeah, I did the Blacktober thing, which I loved so much. For anyone who doesn't know, essentially it was, you know, Black artists who were either reimagining existing characters as Black people or creating their own characters, their own Black characters. And so, you know, there's a lot of talk, you know, constantly online about, you know, representation and what that means and the importance of it, and particularly within media and within art in spaces where, you know, growing up, I didn't see a whole lot of people like me in anime or comics or movies or television. And so being able to either highlight those influences, those people, those characters that I saw that reflected a bit of myself back to me was really important. Or also being able to, you know, maybe a character that didn't necessarily look like me, but that felt, you know, in some way representative of me, and being able to reimagine them as someone who looked more like me was something that was really cool. It was something that was really fun to do. It was a really interesting exercise in creativity to do that. And so many of the other artists that I saw, you know, posting things was like just this amazing outpouring of all these extremely talented artists. Like, I really didn't even really like really start picking up a lot of drawing consistently until, you know, kind of quarantine started. So, you know, it's been like, you know, a little less than a year for me since I really started working on improving my visual art. So it was just really an inspiring moment. It was something that was a really great motivation for me to actually sit down for, you know, days after each other to put this together, to, you know, make something like this. And so, yeah, it was just a really great experience overall and something that I really enjoyed doing.
That is super amazing. That zine is so great. We had a really good time looking over it. Essie, do you remember where you can find it? It's on Gumroad, right?
It's on Gumroad. I think if you Google Blacktober 2020 Gumroad, it pulls it right up.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I believe that it's available for very small donations. I think also they have a free option if you need it, but kicking them some cash is cool too.
So worth a couple of bucks.
Yeah.
Or much more if you have it. Yeah, I think that Blacktober always feels like this explosion of joy and creativity. And I really like it. I feel very grateful to be on Twitter and get to just be like, what? What? Right. Amazing. Yeah. It's just me going, amazing, over and over again. Like I'm, you know, the one with the weird hair from Back to the Future. Amazing.
Right.
So yes, let's talk about like, how did you get into nerddom and then, you know, comics? And were they like the same timing for you?
Oh God, what do you mean? How did I get into it? Like I was
like, what was
born,
your first thing?
I was born into the nerddom.
Came out of the womb like with a Magneto helmet on. And just like, here I am.
I mean, arguing on the internet out of the womb.
Yeah, I mean, X-Men was always like my jam, like growing up. Mm-hmm. You know, the animated cartoon was always on, you know, Saturday mornings. And then I would always wake up like 2 hours before I had to leave for school because Sailor Moon and Digimon would play in the mornings as well as Pokemon. So, yeah, it's just been like for as long as I can remember. And then like before that, it was like, you know, dinosaurs. Like I was into the whole Jurassic Park thing and just always super into and like fixated on whatever was my interest to be at the time. Like there was a time where I was like super into marine biology. And so I was like reading all these books about like deep sea creatures and like, you know, and so it was just like, yeah, I've always just kind of really found something I loved and just latched onto it. And, you know, I think anime has been a really longstanding one for me and comics have been another one that have been really longstanding for me. Even before I even knew what the word anime meant, like, I think back when, you know, Sailor Moon and all that stuff was, like, on TV, I don't even think we really knew that it was called anime. It was just, like, what was on, and that was, like, really cool to watch. You know, it was, like, another cartoon that was on TV, but when you're, you know, 7 and 8 years old, you don't really, like, know exactly, like, oh, yeah, like, this is anime. Well, that was also, like, before the internet was, like,
right,
really ubiquitous, you know, so...
Couldn't like read the Wikipedia entry at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember watching Sailor Moon a bunch as a kid, whenever it was on Cartoon Network. So it would be alongside like Dexter's Laboratory and stuff like that. Yeah, Sailor Moon, gateway drug.
Right. And then yeah, the Toonami era of like, you know, Dragon Ball Z, Cowboy Bebop, I think like Big O was another one. Just all of these different things that were just like, just always there. And like, I never really like knew the full storylines behind them because it was always like random episodes in random order across like different channels. Like, you know, like, because like, you know, I didn't have cable for a lot of the time growing up. And so Sailor Moon and Digimon would be on these like really weird channels again at like 5:30 in the morning. And so like I would just be up like watching these random episodes and like I don't think they ever really were playing in order. I was just like, this just looks so cool.
That's kind of what it's like to be an X-Men fan too, huh? It's
right.
Just, you just
oh
kind
my
of
God,
like
yeah.
pick up an issue and you're just like, no idea. But I love this guy with the glowing red eyes, and I do really enjoy the person who can turn to diamond, and then like you just
little
kind of,
Mr. Slashy, as I thought of Wolverine.
Yeah.
Little Mr. Claws Man, Angry Claws.
Little Mr. Angry Claws.
Like I remember my first full like storyline of X-Men that I ever read was Age of Apocalypse.
Same.
Like,
oh my God. What's up?
Like that my was friend mine. Had like every issue, every single issue, like the single issues of it, and let me borrow them for like 2 years, and I would just like read them over and over again. And so that was like the one like full ass storyline that I had of X-Men growing
completely
up.
Completely out of continuity. And also it is the most glam universe, right? So like everybody has cool eye makeup and like
right. And we got Blink out of clothes. That, which like, oh my God, I love her. Like what a badass. And I don't know if you've read Saladin Ahmed's Exiles series.
Definitely.
Which I just love that we got like more of Blink. You know, again, we got her as this kind of like West Indian woman as opposed to, you know, they kind of had her like as this like nebulous, like no one like really, she didn't really have a background because she was from
like
this alternative universe.
Skin too.
And she has pink skin. And so it was really cool to get like more of a background of like who this character is and where they come from. So it was,
I agree. That is a really good series. Oh my God. And Age of Apocalypse is like the most wild thing to step into the X-Men on, for sure. I remember doing the same, though. I think I like read like one issue of Generation X, and then I picked up Age of Apocalypse and was just like, I have no idea, like, what is happening? And you just think that's the regular universe, right? Like, that was how I felt. And then, like, whenever it comes back out of it, I was just like, what? Everybody died? Like, back then you, like, really didn't have, like, the internet, right? So you're just like, everything I'm reading is just, like, total face value. Like, I don't totally know what's going on. So, yeah, I mean, that sounds like you and I have a lot in common. And I know Essie as well, because we're used to walking into these, you know, sci-fi and fantasy kind of franchises just being like, all right, what? You need like a roadmap to get out of there. But there is no roadmap. It's just called buying more comics.
So. Yeah.
Good luck. Sorry. Like, I know you were wanting to find out what happens at the end. There is no end. It just keeps going. Goodbye.
No, no. You have part 1, 3, and 5, but you don't have part 6 and you don't have part 4. So good luck.
And part 7 never got published because it got canceled.
Suddenly, yeah.
I really do feel for people who have a hard time getting into comics, because I get it. It's not an easy industry. But I do think one of the things comics teaches you to do that I think is a very valuable skill is to roll with the punches. You don't have to know everyone's name. You don't need to know why they're mad at each other, but you can tell they're mad. And you just keep rolling until one day someone gives you 6 pages of backstory. And then you're like, oh, damn, that's what happened.
Yeah. Whenever you find out that Wolverine isn't just mad at like one or two people, but he's mad at all of the people, and you're just like, oh, it doesn't matter what this guy's saying to Wolverine. He's just going to be mad about it. It's fine.
Yeah. I was into the animated series of X-Men and then also Batman TAS. And I don't know which I saw first. I also saw everything completely out of sequence. I think I saw maybe one episode of X-Men. We did not have cable. We had rabbit ears, and then we didn't have them, I think, for a while. And I just remember being like, wow, this Wolverine got a lot in common with me. Seems very angry, is pretty short, does have adamantium claws. Okay, that's the one that's different. So, yeah, I think the X-Men are really special. So I think it's cool that they're so important to you as well, Craig.
I was like, I relate to Jean Grey because she's always fainting and I always want to faint.
I mean, comics and powerful women in general have a rocky history.
I'm so tired. I'm just going to take a nap on the ground, okay?
Which, I don't know, are either of you watching WandaVision right now?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, as of when we're recording, like, the finale hasn't happened yet, but like, oh my God, I just, I can't wait. I can't wait.
Yeah. I'm just really happy to know that Monica is going to be in Captain Marvel too.
I know. Like,
yes.
I just don't have to worry about her fate. You know, I'm like, no matter what terrible thing happens in the conclusion of this episode or this season, she's going to be in that movie and I'm going to get to dream about that.
Oh, God, that just reminded me. They would have to work so hard to in any way, like, kill her character or endanger her character within the current, like, framework of the MCU. And then I remember Darwin.
Oh God, yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Which, like, your power can literally be, hey, you can't kill me, and then some fucking white douchebag writer can just come along and be like, no, we're gonna do that anyway.
Surprise. He's the one who dies. He's actually the one. So let me run this by everybody. So we're just gonna kill this guy. Does anybody see a problem with that?
His power is like literally to be unkillable. Like,
okay, all right. Yep. I mean, yeah, send the pitch over. It sounds good to me.
That'll really raise the stakes for the white characters.
Yeah, you know? I feel like it will. I feel like it will.
This is all sarcasm.
I don't see that happening with Monica.
No, but fuck.
It would be so ridiculously hard for them to justify in any way.
And everybody loves her so much. Like, everybody has nothing but good wishes for this character.
As well they should.
And she's, like, kind of the best part of the whole show.
And literally just, like, one of the most powerful characters in the MCU currently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love her. Thank you. everybody. Earlier today, I made myself a sandwich, and I thought to myself, if I could rate and review this sandwich, I would give it 5 stars. And I would say, this sandwich is so incredible. It is the best sandwich I've had literally in days. And it was everything I wanted it to be. And that would be a positive review. That would help me see what audience responses were to my sandwich. And, you know, it would just be really a helpful system. I wonder if there's another situation where rating and reviewing would come in handy. Oh,
huh.
Oh my God. No, what? You could rate and review this podcast, and then that helps us find our audience, and it helps us find whatever we've lost. It helps us find what we've lost.
Helps us find our socks, our keys, our cell phone. People don't talk about it enough. When you rate and review, it really changes someone's life.
Yeah, it's going to change my life, that's for sure. And we like to read the reviews, you know, the ones that are positive, that say soothing and nice things.
5 stars. We'll give you 5 stars as a listener. You give us 5 stars as a podcast.
5 sandwiches. This podcast, let's face it, is 5 delicious sandwiches.
Craig, you have selected an amazing series of comics and TV shows for us to discuss today. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about Far Sector, which is the N.K. Jemisin Green Lantern. Abbott, written by Saladin Ahmed. Lovecraft Country, from HBO, based on the novel by Matt Ruff, I believe. And Watchmen, also on HBO, a TV show, based on the Alan Moore comics.
Yes.
I just wanted to say what we were talking about. But I don't even know correct. Where to start. I'm like...
I have varying feelings. I mean, like, Watchmen, I think, is probably, like, the best single season of television I've ever seen in my life. That is just, like, my personal opinion. That is how I feel about it. No one else is required to feel that way about it. But for me, it is perfect, and I love it. It just gave me everything that I wanted out of the story that it was telling me.
Mm.
I don't feel quite the same way about Lovecraft Country, but I did enjoy it. And it's interesting. So I rewatched both of them and, you know, reread all of the first series of Abbott. There's a new one that's currently out. That's Abbott right. 1973, which I haven't had a chance to read yet.
It looks so good. I have it's it on Comixology,
right?
I haven't read
yes.
yet.
And then Far Sector has not ended yet. There's 2 more right. issues before the end of the, I think it's a limited series from DC. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, it's not completely finished yet. But like going through all of it, I was like, oh my God, so many parallels. As I was like watching and then like reading and then, so I started watching one episode of Watchmen, then I watched one episode of Lovecraft Country, then I read the first issue of Abbott, then I like went back through and was like watching Watchmen and Lovecraft Country alternatively, and then like interspersing Abbott, and then I just like finished all of that and then read all of Far Sector at the end. So, but I just love like how much like these stories fit with each other. So like Lovecraft Country and Abbott fit together actually like really well as these stories that take place within 1 or 2 decades of each other. So Abbott takes place in like 1972 and Lovecraft Country is like the early 60s, late 50s-ish type of era. And they both heavily deal with like magic and especially like dark magic being used in particular against Black people and reclaiming that magic to use against the people that are oppressing the Black people with that magic. So it was just like seeing that. And because when I first started watching Lovecraft Country, I was like immediately, I was like, I need to reread Abbott. And so this was just my excuse to do both of those things again. So thank you for that.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
Excuses to revisit things you love.
Yeah. And also we've talked about Abbott before. I have no idea what episode that was on, but didn't we have it as a comic of the week?
It was a comic of the week because I am a huge fan, as was Sarah.
It's really
of
good,
that
yeah.
piece. Just, oh, talk about like evoking a time period through every like iota of Abbott. It's like from the colors to like the, oh my God, the style is all done so cool and the clothes. Oh.
The monsters. I love the monsters.
Yes.
beautiful. I love Abbott, you know, I just love her. Oh my God. Love her.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's one of the things that Lovecraft Country actually does really well too, is it does like evoke that time period, period really well. You know, whereas, you know, Watchmen is, you know, more of, it's a modern story. It takes place in the, you know, it was released in 2019 and the story is taking place, you know, in an alternate reality, but in 2019 and with flashbacks to, you know, again, a similar time as Lovecraft Country, because it has flashbacks to the Tulsa Massacre, which is also, you know, a storyline within Lovecraft Country. And so Lovecraft Country and Abbott do a really good job of setting you in that time period and seeing the similarities between Elena Abbott and Letitia Lewis, I think is really interesting too. They're both photographers. Like, they're both like investigating this dark magical mystery, and they're both fighting against not only this surreal magical element, but just the reality of being Black women within their time periods. And so watching these two women navigate that while also asserting themselves, like while also, you know, exhibiting not only like strength, but like vulnerability, and using that as a way to, you know, cope, survive, and move through these like terrifying events in their lives is really interesting. And so I really just loved watching these things and reading these things so close together.
I completely agree. I think that they're so powerful on their own. But then when you put Abbott and Lovecraft Country together, they just make each other stronger. Like, there's so much being discussed around the power of Black women and the burden put on Black women to be powerful. I mean, I think the story for me, honestly, in Lovecraft Country that like blew my mind was actually Hippolyta's. I was so moved by her arc, and also like very into her blue hair. I mean, who's not? And that was just, to me, it really, as sort of a subplot reinforcing the plot that Letty's going through, and sort of, you know, only because we're talking about them together, reinforcing the plot that Abbott is going through. I just thought it was a really powerful way to, like you said, show vulnerable people and show their vulnerability being a part of their strength.
Yeah, and I think that when you bring up Hippolyta, that also reminded me of, you know, where Abbott is, you know, it's a 5-issue comic book, so it really is focused on this one character. But there's a lot more that you get to see when you have a show like Lovecraft Country, where you get, you know, 10 episodes, and there is more, it is more of an ensemble. So it's not like a one-to-one in terms of Abbott and Letitia, but there are these like things that go along with each other that I really loved. And with Watchmen and Far Sector, they're both more on like the science fiction side of things. They're both set in more of a modern day setting, where the Far Sector, it's within the same like time period as our current day, but again, an alternate reality where Green Lanterns and, you know, Supermans and Batmans exist.
Mm-hmm.
And we have someone who, you know, both Sojourner Mullane, Joe Mullane in Far Sector, and Angela Abar have gone from, you know, Joe went from the military to the police force to a Green Lantern. And Angela was like the child of a military veteran and became a police officer, and then became kind of a mass vigilante who was, based on the world that is presented within Watchmen, they are pretty much the same as vigilantes. You know, they kind of work extrajudicially. And so that was another one where I was like, oh, this is really another set of parallels that I didn't realize until reading and watching these things together and seeing how, yeah, these characters line up again too. So I was just like really like laughing like every other time I was like read something. I was like, oh, I just like, that's like something that just happened in Watchmen. Like, we have these different things of like, you know, seeing people in power who are willing to essentially like burn it all down rather than in any way cede their power to like people that they consider to be inferior. That's something that happens throughout all of these stories. We see, you know, with the Seventh Cavalry, like, you know, trying to kill Dr. Manhattan in order to claim the power of a god in Lovecraft Country with, you know, the Braithwaites and Christina, who are willing to sacrifice whatever is necessary in order to achieve like immortality or, you know, the gate to the Garden of Eden. In Abbott with, what's his name, Belcamp, who's like this wizard guy who is trying to bring about this quote unquote age of heroes in, you know, Greek mythology. And that's what I was going to say before about Abbott and Hippolyta, is this theme of tradition that runs through both of these stories, and how Abbott has like this routine. She's very structured in her life. And over the course of the book, that routine is broken by her losing her job, by her being faced with this dark magic. And Hippolyta has a similar, you know, experience of having to move away from tradition and realizing the tradition that she has been subjecting herself to has been something that has shrunken her. Like she says, like, you know, when she has the moment where she goes into the multiverse machine and she meets the beyond.
The like post-humans.
She comes back with the realization that like all of these things that she thought she was satisfied in were just essentially these routines and these traditions that she had fallen into and allowed herself to become comfortable in. You know, it's like the boiling frog parable or analogy or whatever, where, you know, if you put a frog in cold water and slowly raise the temperature, it doesn't realize it's boiling and then it just dies without ever even trying to jump out of the water. And so Hippolyta has that where she realizes that she's been shrinking herself for so long. And Abbott has that sense of, you know, she has her routine, she has her structure, she eats the same thing every day. She drinks two brandies before bed. And then, like, we see that extreme sense of tradition reflected back in this other, this evil character, Belcamp, who is constantly talking about how the world has moved into this more like effeminate age of wit. And we need to go back to like the traditions of strength and blood and heroicism and all of these things that are reflected as the extremes of what traditionalism and quote unquote conservatism mean. And so like all of these things are just like throughout all of these stories. And I just, oh my God, I'm geeking out right now, hardcore. So please stop me at any point. If you
never, I'll never stop you. I'm like prompting you. I'm like, post-human, keep going. Don't stop, keep going. I mean, I think you're right. I think you chose a really beautiful quartet of properties to be in conversation with each other, because there's also connections between them in different ways as well. So I think, you know, one of the things I really loved about Far Sector and Abbott are, you know, there's a lot of queerness in them, and it doesn't feel like a complicated queerness. It feels like a very casual queerness, which is very refreshing. And then Lovecraft Country, you know, has this huge grappling with what does queerness mean and how are men formed around their queerness? How does, you know, Ruby discover what could be or could have been her queerness, you know?
With Watchmen, there is a queer storyline. Like, her grandfather is queer. Her grandfather has that whole thing with Captain Metropolis, which, oh, now that story, whoo, that was a really good story on the intersection between race and queerness, because, whoo, yeah, that fucking white gay man, like, fucked Will over. Like, and that is something, like, if we want to talk about, like, racism within the, you know, queer community. If you want to talk about the fucking double gut punch of being Black and queer, yeah, actually Watchmen does a really good job with that too.
That is a beautiful comparison to compare with Ruby and Christina from Lovecraft Country, right? Like, those are two Black people in relationships with white people who are engaging in some kind of queerness. One more explicitly so than the other. One sort of like, wait, what the fuck? You could just change what you look like? What the fuck? And so you're right. I think there's so much there about the way that white queer people fuck over Black queer people.
Yeah. And I love how in Abbott, like, the complication is a bit in the queerness in itself, but it's also just in the fact that these two people are very different people. So like with Elena and Amelia, the issue with them is more so that, yes, it is like the place that they're in, You know, because there's a moment where they talk about, this isn't Paris. Like, when we were in Paris, we could be open, we could be out. And the issue isn't me not wanting to be out. The issue is the danger of us both being, you know, Elena is Black and Amelia, I believe, is Korean and Black within the comic. And, you know, us being where we are is more the issue. And even that, you know, gets resolved in a way by the end of the first arc, or this first story within the world of Abbott. And in Far Sector, it's even more so casual, because it's, again, it takes place in either a near or far future, and also takes place, you know, millions of light years away.
Far Sector.
Yeah. And so, like, it's just like, oh yeah, like, me and Season were together. It didn't work out. We were better off as friends, and so now we're just good friends. And then that's that.
Yeah, that's always nice. I like that a lot. Whenever there's couples that are buds in fiction, I don't feel like it happens too much. I don't know.
Yeah. And
Elaine and Jerry from Seinfeld, I guess.
Yeah. And I think that they're like, each of these stories is definitely a product of its time.
Yeah.
You know, and the time in which it's set. Mm. And so that's why I love, again, we get to see this range of time periods and these Black stories being told across these different decades, where we have, you know, Lovecraft Country, like, taking place from the 20s. In the flashbacks to the 50s, we have, you know, Abbott taking place in the 70s. We have Watchmen taking place with flashbacks back to the 20s, but then also to, you know, what is 2019 in this alternate reality. And then we have Far Sector, which is this more futuristic, or at least, like, if it is a contemporary time period, it's at the very least, like, you know, very far flung from the reality of Earth.
Quite alien.
Yeah. And so I love too that we get that, like, all of these stories are, they're such good stories, and some of them do handle things a little better. Like, I still have some issues with Lovecraft Country's handling of queer people and, yeah, you know, trans people, you know, yeah, particularly with Yahima.
Yeah,
you know,
two-spirit being, character.
Yeah, yeah. Two-spirit, intersex, you know, not being played by, you know, a two-spirit actor, also being killed within 10 minutes of, ugh, you know, her being introduced.
I was glad I knew it was coming, because I didn't watch it.
Yeah.
I was like, guess what I don't need to see?
Yeah, and also being killed by another queer character.
Yeah, that gutted me.
All of that just felt so gross to me. Like, it just, like, it hurt to watch that.
I was going to say, like, I think what's so frustrating is we see him kill her, and then in the next episode, he gets his, like, queer moment in the sun, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm watching him do that, and I'm like, I'm so happy for Montrose, and I'm furious. He just killed someone who has been imprisoned by a white man for centuries at that point, maybe a century. My heart felt so broken. And it's not that I don't believe that these kind of violences happen. Like, obviously they do. I am alive. I read the news. But it just seems so like a missed opportunity. And I know that the creators did apologize. They were like, right, we shouldn't have done that. And I appreciate that they did. And I hope that other people will not do this in the future. Like, but yeah, I remember my partner and I were watching it, and it was just like, wow, is this going to be the only queerness? And then, like, the Ruby Christina thing's, like, super fucked, you know? Like, yeah, it's we can't by any means reclaim that as, like, a cool queer story. Is there some creepy, sexy shit? Yeah. Before it gets really fucking terrible. I guess I'll say I felt like you did, Craig, where it left a sour taste in my mouth in a series that otherwise I would say is among the best I've seen.
Yeah, that really was just one of the things that it really just, like, was a gut punch, because, yeah, there was Yahima, and then there was Montrose, and then there was Ruby. And it just felt like the times that the show decided to, you know, engage with the fantasy of it all, versus when it decided to be, like, you know, quote unquote, like realistic to the times.
Yes.
It just felt like it was always particularly harsher when it came to queer characters.
Well said. And I
just didn't enjoy that. That was something that I just kept noticing time and time again, and it just kept rubbing against me the wrong way.
Yeah, and I really, really struggled. I mean, at every point, but like I said, I skipped watching Yahima die because I was like, I just don't need to see this. And then to find that Ruby dies at the end, and it's just like, damn. Like,
which, I mean, she might not have died.
Like, right, well...
Because when I was watching it again, I actually, like, I noticed, because I, like, kind of rewound that last scene in the finale, which the finale, honestly, it was a mess. I was, like, rewatching this again. I was actually, like, really kind of, like, get into it and feel it again after that kind of, like, sour taste was still in my mouth. But then when it hit the finale, it just felt so, the finale just feels really rushed.
I think it just feels like there's a lot.
I get like maybe they weren't sure if they were going to get another season, but I don't know. Again, Watchmen did a really good job of like finishing a full season that could potentially have led to another season. Now we know that it's not going to get one, but.
Wait, didn't they change their mind on that? I thought they said they were going to do one.
Oh, did
they change
they?
Again?
Well, because I heard that Lindelof said that he wasn't going to be involved with it. And so, honestly, I don't know if I would want another season if he's not involved with it, because the execution of it was done so well. I'm not sure.
Okay. It says unlikely. I think before the pandemic had happened, they were so happy with the success that they were going to push forward with a second season without Lindelof. But I'm thinking that the pandemic killed that momentum, which I agree, honestly,
I'm fine with.
I want it to stop where it is. I think... You might be correct that it is one of the finest seasons of television. I think one of the problematic things is that Alan Moore, for all of his many, many flaws, created the Watchmen universe and said like he didn't want there to be any sequels or remakes. So I think there's some people who feel like conflicted about like a, you know, a creator's property being out of their hands. But we live in the universe we live in. And for the universe we live in, Watchmen is pretty fucking amazing. Regina King, my God, my God.
Yeah. And I'm like, if Zack Snyder can, you know, get a shot at it, I think that...
Someone with some actual talent.
Yeah, I think that we can be okay with, like, how this turned out. So, and you know, apparently there's going to be another season of Lovecraft Country. And so, you know, we'll see what happens from there. But I was talking about Ruby, and they had like these like series of like all of these flashes.
Right, when you
Gia
can see inside
was
of
connected
whatever
to Christina yeah. and mm-hmm, Titus. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. so like we saw that, you know, she was hooked up to like the potion machine. And earlier in the episode, Christina made a point to say that the people on the machine weren't dead. They were in a coma. Even though I feel like at some point earlier in the season, they did say that they were dead, but...
Yeah, earlier in the season, she said they had to be dead. So you're right. I did find all that quite confusing.
Yeah, so I think that they might have retconned that a little bit.
They better fucking bring Ruby back, is all I can say.
Either way, it was fucked up. Like, it's a fucked up way to leave a character at the end of a season, whether she's dead or... like in a coma where like no one really knows where she is potentially.
Well, they all think she's dead, whether or not she really is, right?
Exactly.
So she may as well be, you know?
So yeah, either way, it's kind of fucked up.
And it like is a really, really, you know, it is a formulaic step-by-step example of bury your gaze. A character has queer sex for the first time. Oopsie, they die. You know, like that really hurt my heart, you know? And I appreciate you pointing that out. It's important to think about because I think you're right. Like queer folks, we so often end up as punching bags. And then I think when you compound queerness and you have black queer people, the show is not kind to black queer people. Lovecraft Country is not. And it's not kind to indigenous queer people. And so it's, heavy stuff.
And you know, there's a conversation, not necessarily like here, but like within the community as far as, you know, the treatment of Ruby as a dark-skinned, a larger character versus how Letty is treated as like a light-skinned and thin character. And so like there's that conversation that, you know, the conversation of colorism and fat phobia in terms of like how characters are written is something that can also be had. But like, it's just like...
The fat shaming was believable, which is not that hard. Fat shaming is very believable. And it was frustrating. Yeah, for sure. Although, damn, did they dress Ruby well. That outfit where she's got those red shorts and that like collar, sort of like almost rainbow striped shirt, but like very faded. I was like, that is the outfit I am meant to wear as a fat person. Give it to me.
I love the costuming. Like, oh my God, the everything that like Ruby had on, like every outfit that Letitia had on, like they were just like, they were on point and they just like felt so like in the world. Like, I mean, there's like that one, I think it was like episode 2, where they're in like the Braithwood Manor and Letty is like trying on all of these different outfits in the mansion. And it's just like, oh my God, she looks good in every single one of them. Oh my God. I love it.
Every time she walks into a room, you're just like, dang it, that is a good outfit. You know, I feel like we could just talk about these four properties forever, which we just said to each other in before we started
recording.
In the
before times, yeah.
Which they're so rich, right? There's so much we could have talked about Far Sector just this whole episode. We could have talked about Abbott this whole episode. We have talked about Abbott in other episodes. We could have talked about Lovecraft Country. We could have talked about Watchmen. There's so much beautiful richness here. And thank you for the opportunity, Craig. It's so beautiful to have you on talking about, you know, gender and sexuality and blackness and queerness. And, you know, I like when our episodes kind of raise more questions than they do answers. And I feel like this was a really nice one that raised a lot of like, and I'll be thinking about this for a long time. You know? So I'm really grateful for it. But I'm curious, like, do you have any concluding thoughts about, you know, either the connections between them or what you hope our listeners will go do when they're done listening to us?
I mean, honestly, I would just say, you know, seek out more from these creators, you know, particularly Black women, Black queer people. Far Sector is written by N.K. Jemisin, who has a lot of amazing books, you know.
Yes.
I can come back and just talk about N.K. Jemisin
exactly,
works.
Exactly, yeah.
At any point, like, you know, I've, you know, run through like the Broken Earth trilogy. You know,
so
the
my
city
secret
we
dream
became
is to have her on the pod, and if it happens, Craig, I'll hit you up.
Oh my God, like
I got
like,
to interview her once.
I'm like
the article
glitching out
never,
right now. Like,
she's so amazing on the phone, like on like recordings. She's so kind. She like took time to interview with me when I was just like a baby freelancer. I did not know what the fuck I was doing. It was the worst interview. I felt like such an asshole. But she was just like, "I'll hold your hand, like you fucking fool." But she was super nice. And unfortunately, the interview never ran. But I still have all the everything she said to me that was nice. She was like, "Wendy, you'll win a book award." And I was like, "I'm gonna remember this till the moment I die." N.K. Jemisin. So yes, like, if you want to talk about her more, I am here for it.
Like, right? No, like, if you want to get if you get me and her on the same mic, like, dear God, like her, you know, Vita Ayala, like I could talk about like their works, like so, like oh my God. Let's see. Read these people, find their work. Like seek it out. Like these are stories like, and this is the things like, starting in, it was like 2000, I think it was like 2018 or 2019. I was just like, you know, I'd been, you know, I think it was like coming right off of the whole Game of Thrones thing, like the whole Game of Thrones finale. And I was just like, okay, I'm done with, you know, white dude fantasy. Other than like Brandon Sanderson, I just have such a soft spot for the Stormlight Archives. But
well,
like,
then I will reserve the comment I was gonna make.
Oh no, say it, please. Let's
oh
talk
no,
about
I was gonna say like that's the realization I had. I started with Sanderson in fantasy as well, and then I tried to come back to it after having read N.K. Jemisin, after reading Rebecca Rowan Horse,
right,
after reading, you know, Cameron Hurley, and I was just like, I don't think I like it. Like, I don't, this used to do something for me. It doesn't anymore. So even today I was, you know, tweeting with someone about Patrick Rothfuss, and I really loved Name of the Wind, which is like, you know, pretty fantastic fantasy, especially for modernly written.
If it ever gets finished, but you know.
Yeah, it's never going to get finished. No fucking way. He's making comics now. He's just like, fuck it. But even that, I'm like, oh, I'm glad I read it before I read this other stuff that I now, like, I don't know. I'm reading. I've been in the middle of The City We Became for forever because I also read for work. So I just don't have a lot of time for reading for fun. But it's just like, damn, N.K. Jemisin, damn. Like, you know how to tell a story that makes me just cry and cry and then cry some more. And it's like I'm sad and I'm happy and I'm inspired and I'm impressed and I'm all those things at once. So anyways, yeah. That was my little N.K. Jemisin rant.
Well, no, because so the thing about it and the reason why I do have a soft spot for Sanderson is because it's not this like, you know, like super like elaborately written or like high prose, you know, in terms of like the writing. But like the man can write fucking action. Like, and I get a thrill like reading through a lot of his action sequences, which is why I still have such a soft spot for that. It's like that.
Yeah,
like,
he has some killer endings. Yeah.
Because I'm
and
very
like twists that you're like, fuck, god damn it. Fucking I will spend the rest of my life trying to pull off that Mistborn twist at the end. I will spend the rest of my life trying to figure out how to do that. Like I'm always like, how am I gonna work out a twist that feels like it was always meant to be there, but shocks the fuck out of you? Like, how am I gonna do that?
And yeah, and I love that. Like, in some weird way, it feeds that like anime nerd in me that's like really into like, I love like a good fight scene in an anime. And like, that's like the energy that I get from a lot of Sanderson's action writing, like the action scenes that he writes. It gives me that like flow of like, I can like picture it so clearly in my head, like as it's happening, and it makes me like want to like almost like want to get up and like move along with it. Like I just love that so much. But like, yeah,
you just like took me back to the finale of the Mistborn, the second Mistborn book, which I thought had such a good finale, you know, a final sequence there. So okay, fine, Sanderson, fine.
That's why I have like a soft spot for Sanderson. But like, yeah, other than that, like I've been like reading like, yeah, N.K. Jemisin. I went and read like, you know, so much Octavia Butler. And then even
I just like fantasy where people fuck, man. I just like it when they fuck. And Brandon Sanderson is not giving me the fucking I need. Not personally, because I don't need that from Brandon Sanderson. I mean, in my books.
But the thing I love too is like, yes, the slow burn of like so many of like, you know, Broken Earth trilogy, like there's a slow burn to it that like builds to where like by the time you're getting to these like climactic moments, you're like crying for these characters. Like you were like, you're heartbroken when they're heartbroken. You feel like their triumph, like so internally. I don't want to like generalize, but it's something that I found is like happens so much more with like women authors that I read. Like reading, I don't know if you've heard of Book of M by Pang Shepherd.
Yeah, I just actually was reading that. I'm not through it all the way, but
oh my god!
Yeah. If I haven't read it, Sarah probably has. We have like we're like a puzzle. We fit together with our reading list and have like a little bit of crossover. It's beautiful.
Yeah, like that Station 11 by like Emily St. Clair. Like these stories about the apocalypse where it's not just like shoot zombies in the head and like as Tara calls it, my co-host Tara, she calls it like the boy fights. It's not like these boy fights. It's like these really like nuanced and like emotionally deep stories like that also take you really far into like the minds of the characters and the world that they're in. And, you know, that's not to say that like, you know, action isn't a great thing to have in these stories, but like, I just feel like it's so much more balanced.
Well, I think they do a really, like a lot of these stories you're talking about have a really great way where the external action, the things we think of like typically being action, they're almost always echoing an internal experience. And so then you have this just this real deep resonance when you read it where you're right, you have a deep emotional experience versus just like cool fight scene. I mean, you could have both. Cool fight scene and now I'm crying. Great. Love that. Win-win.
Yeah, and I feel like in some of the later Stormlight Archives books, it's like getting to be more of that. And I feel like that's why, again, I do enjoy Brandon Sanderson's because in a lot of his forewords, he talks about his own personal development as a writer and the critiques that he's taken and like the people that he has had as like, you know, beta readers and like the input that they provided him and how he's incorporated that and how, you know, him giving credit to the work that they do and how that influences him to, again, not just be like that standard white dude fantasy writer writing that like standard white dude fantasy story. So I think that his his evolution over time, it has shown that like growth towards more emotional maturity, like within the stories that he tells, which again, just adds that much more. I love it. I could talk about
this. I love this,
all
like
day.
Unexpected like twist at the end where we're like, let's talk about fantasy really intensely for a minute. Like, I love it. Oh my gosh. Like, I think half the reason I started this podcast, or we started this podcast, Sarah and I, is because for me, I was like, I don't have anyone to talk with about comics. Like, I just want to talk about comics. And then we've slowly been like, comics and pop culture. Bitches on comics can do whatever we want. The world is our oyster. Wow. This has been a damn delight. I don't have any concluding thoughts other than if you haven't seen or read these things, please go do that. Far Sector is incredible. Abbott is beautiful. Lovecraft Country has some really important points, clearly with lots of trigger warnings and content warnings. And skip the very last minute of episode 4, at least. You may want to skip other parts as well. Go read an article about it. And, you know, Watchmen, again, a spectacular season of TV. And we're 90% sure not going to get a season 2. So you get to kind of just enjoy it and not have to enjoy it for the rest of your life. You can just be like, oh, that season was great. Gotta love that.
I was just going to agree that I love it when series end. I think that yes. That's good for all
more
of
limited
us.
Series.
Yep, I gotta yes. Say, I do love a I was gonna go back into how I wanted a grappler series. All right. I do like a series, you know. Maybe it could be about lady wrestlers. I don't know. But
lady wrestlers and magic.
If not, there's other series, for instance, the things that we talked about today, and they're all very important to check out. And I'm gonna go ahead and second NK Jemisin as well.
Yes, I know you're a big NK fan.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So Craig, one more time, tell people where they can find you, tell them about your podcast and where they can learn about it.
Yes, I personally am on Twitter. I'm at Catharticus and my podcast is called I Want You to Watch This. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at IWYTWT, on our website, which is IWYTWT.com. You can find our pod hub at anchor.fm/IWYTWT. And you can find us on Twitch streaming on Sundays at noon Mountain Standard Time, which is twitch.tv/IWYTWT.
I love it. We will also put all of that in the show notes. So if you didn't catch that, don't worry. We'll put a link to Craig's Twitter, and then all of the I Want You to Watch This links as well. So listener, if you're listening, you're like, my pen ran out of ink, which is what I assume you're using to write with. I'm assuming it has a plume on it, and you're like, I spilled my ink when my cat jumped up. Well, I changed your accent, listener.
I'm just like, wow, that is exactly what I'm doing right now.
Sarah's like, shotgun, not all the ink.
Not the ink again. You got me. But I wanted to ask, do you have a movie that's coming up on the podcast?
We are streaming on Sunday, and we're going to be talking about The Five Bloods, Spike Lee joint on Netflix, which I still have not watched yet, so I can't really say how I feel about it, but...
Mm-hmm. We'll find out soon.
Yeah, if you want to find out more, check us out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's only ever been 2 movies that we've done where it's been like, absolutely, by no means... Watch this. Do not watch this unless you really are just like in for a pain. And that was The Iceman and Cats.
Ooh, yeah. I mean, sometimes yeah. I am.
Mushrooms are the only way to do Cats. That's
yeah.
We just figured that was a great way to end 2020. I mean, not a great way, but an appropriate way to end 2020.
On theme. Amazing, Craig. Wow. I'm so glad that we talked today. We'll be talking more. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, please.
Listeners, thank you for joining us. Go check out Craig. Go check out their podcast. I Want You to Watch This. Sarah, you know I love you.
Kate, oh, yeah.
You know I love you.
Love you, Kate.
We all love you, Kate. Deity or person recording this.
Listen in to find out next week.
You won't find out next week.
Nope. Maybe the week after.
We'll see. We'll see.
We are are a podcast that is all about making comic books more accessible to LGBTQ folks and women. So if you have a question about anything related to comics, comic adaptations, pop culture in general, conventions, cosplay, you name it, that's what we're here for. You can send us your questions at bitchesoncomics@gmail.com. Unfortunately, Gmail does not like the word bitch. They're pretty judgy about it. So we can't have it spelled out. It is bitchesoncomics@gmail.com. And yeah, remember, there's no I in bitch.
If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Sarah Century, and you can find me at www.sarahcentury.com and Twitter and Instagram. Still Sarah Century on those.
I'm Essie Fleenor. You can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @SE_Fleenor.
Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Churchfire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
Bitches on Comics is recorded in Denver, Colorado. We want to recognize the indigenous peoples who have inhabited and do inhabit this land. The Arapaho Nation, the Ute Nation, the Cheyenne Nation, and others who have been erased from our history and collective memories through colonization.